Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes here with you until 8:40 tonight, and then we will turn it over to Zach Zabin and Cubs pregame. The Cubs are out in the Bay. They are taking on the San Francisco Giants. Notice this on the schedule. Mark Grody is going to be doing the overnight show tonight. I believe that is the role that he's going to be playing on the show. There's a couple ways you can get involved in the program. You can call us at 312-644-6767. You can also text the show if you wish. 670-11 is the way that you do that. You can follow me on the Twitter and on the Instagram. At Lawrence W. Holmes is where you can find me. Here's what we have planned for you tonight. Patrick Mooney of The Athletic is going to join me at 8. He wrote a piece about John Lester perhaps being the greatest free agent that the city of Chicago has ever seen. He makes a compelling argument. We'll discuss, along with other things about the Cubs, they get ready to take on the Giants. We're also going to talk with Dave Ross, my buddy Dave Ross, not the catcher, the broadcaster Dave Ross, who works over at Stadium. I would like to talk with him about what happened in UFC this past weekend. By the way, Maggie Hendricks wrote an incredible piece about Kayla Henderson that you should check out and read. It's really, really good. So we'll do that at 7 o'clock. Before 7 o'clock, we will talk a lot of Cubs. We will get an update on Chris Bryant. We'll talk with him. Well, not with him. We'll talk about him with Mick Gillespie, who's one of the broadcasters for the Tennessee Smokies. He's nice enough to do it as they're getting ready to start their broadcast, which I think is very awesome of him to do. And two things from last week's shows. Adam Amin, who you may know as a play-by-play guy for ESPN, he's going to be calling games for the Bears in preseason. We had a really cool chat last week, and I wanted to share it with the people who are listening in the 6 because it happened in the 7. So I wanted to share a little bit of that conversation. I think that you will enjoy it. The other thing, and I know you probably didn't hear this because this was on a Friday night. It's kind of a weird week. Emily Kaplan, who covers hockey for ESPN, and I had a great conversation about the NHL. And there was a portion of the conversation that I wanted to bring back to you and ask you a question about. And it has to do with the marketing of NHL players. We're not there yet, but we'll get there probably in the 7 o'clock hour. And hopefully we have, you know, 35, 40 minutes to really talk about what I think is an interesting subject as that league tries to grow and go forward. But before we do all of that, there are some baseball nuggets that we need to get to talking about the Cubs. The Cubs, who have a 7-1 homestand and have won, what, 9 of their last 11 games? So that's good. See, everything is all kind of okay. We'll see how Kyle Hendricks does tonight, because that's the weakness of the Cubs right now is their rotation. Outside of John Lester, that's their weakness. Guys are starting to hit again. Guys are starting to do all the other cool stuff. Like even a guy like Addison Russell, who has been, since June, has been bombing the ball. They're starting to do all of those other things. They're defending well. The only thing that they're not doing well is starting pitching. The bullpen's been strong over the last few games. So We need to talk about that. We need to talk about Hendricks, too. But congratulations to Javi Baez and Wilson Contreras on making their first All-Star games, and I imagine they will have plenty more. And John Lester for making his fifth All-Star game. The guy has been an absolute rock. It doesn't make sense that at this point he is having perhaps one of his best seasons. And I'm interested to get Patrick's thoughts on that when we talk to him a little bit later on. And now they head out west. They have three games in San Francisco, three games in San Diego, then the All-Star break. Their All-Star break is really like 2 days because they're out west. The guys have to that are going to the All-Star game have to fly to D.C. to play, and then they're the first game back from the break Thursday, 6:05 at Wrigley, correct? 6:05 Wrigley when they play the Cardinals. And they're already mad about that, and I understand why they're mad about that. While we talk about that, I don't know if this was just a sports media thing last night on Twitter or if Bears fans themselves tuned in to Very Cavallari. And if you're like, what's Very Cavallari? Okay, so here's the deal. Kristen Cavallari, who is Jay Cutler's wife, has a reality show. And really, it's her reality show. Hence the name, Very Cavallari. But Jay is on there enough that it's tolerable for me. What's crazy about it, I don't, if you watched it, I would love to talk to you about it. 312-644-6767, or you can text us 67011 if you wish. What's crazy about it is I have been telling anyone within the sound of my voice about what it was like to cover Jay Cutler and how, for me, I had no problem with Jay. There was never a moment where I felt like, and I heard from national guys, a prominent national reporter, I'm not going to say their name, was with me in a Bears press conference while we were waiting for Cutler to come out. And this guy asked Jay yes or no questions, which, by the way, is a terrible way to interview. Yes or no questions, that's hard. You want to do how, what, why. Anyway, he didn't get the answers that he wanted. And this reporter leaned over to me and was like, is this guy like this all the time? And my retort was, if you ask Jay a good question, he will give you a good answer. That was always my experience with Jay. In press conferences at Hallis Hall, after rough games, if you ask Jay a good question, he will answer it. You might not like his answer, but he will answer it. He's got a really dry sense of humor. He is extremely sarcastic. And to a certain extent, the idea of don't care, Jay Cutler exists. What's great is last night, if you saw the show, all of that was on display. It was, Jay is like the ombudsman of that show. It's almost like Jay is doing a version of Mystery Science Theater 3000 while being on the show. Like, he knows the show's ridiculous. And he's telling us through talking to Kristen that the show is ridiculous. And I am here for it. I had forgotten that it was coming back on. Luckily, I saw a tweet from Joe Ostrowski. And I was like, yep, I'm setting that season record on the DVR right now. I didn't watch it last night. I actually watched it this afternoon before I came in because my wife was like, are we going to watch this? Are we going to commit to this? So we watched it this afternoon. And when my eyes were rolling the same time Jay's were rolling when he was dealing with his wife, I think that this show has an incredible chance to be a hit as long as Jay keeps being Jay. And the thing is, like, you don't need a ton of it. You don't need a ton of Jay You just need a little bit. Like, it needs to be enough that we can make it through the rest of the BS of the show. But the fact that you know, if you do four segments of the show, he's in each four segments, but it's only like 2 minutes. It's enough for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed his eye rolling at his wife. I really did. I thought it was phenomenal. And I'm looking forward to episode two. They've already set up who some of the villains are on this show. And it's not Jay. There was one thing, though, that I thought deserves more discussion. And I know that we're talking about a reality show, which are oftentimes not real. But there was something in that show that bothered me. And it was her reaction to Jay not wanting to do anything. So, Jay, I imagine that there are some people that still might want Jay Cutler to come play quarterback for him, maybe as a backup somewhere, as some sort of insurance policy. And the bit that they had tweeted out, don't we have that in the vault, don't we, Herbie? We have that in the vault. So I can share with people so you kind of understand where I'm coming from. Because we put it in last week because it was so funny and it was typical Jay, where he's explaining what he wants his day to be now that he's, you know, semi-retired. We got it? Okay, so let me set this up for you real quick. This is Kristen. This was the promo that they used to sell the show, like via Twitter and on E. It's on the E network, by the way. This is Kristen talking to Jay about what his next thing is going to be career-wise. And I want to talk to you about what his reaction to it.
Hey.
Yo.
What's that?
Meat.
What?
That elk my dad killed.
Oh, God.
Why are you so dressed up?
To work? What's on tap for you today?
I've got a big 2:30 appointment.
Picking up boys from school.
Picking up boys at school.
Uh-huh.
Want to be first in line.
Always.
Beat all the other moms there.
But like, honestly, what do you do all day?
I like to keep myself pretty free, so if something does pop up, bounce right into it.
So you think that you're 100% done with football?
I mean, you can't say 100, probably.
When will you know if you're 100%?
September.
Yeah, like the first football game?
Yeah.
You have to realize how many sacrifices I have had to make over the 8 football seasons that we've been together. So now you need to support what I have going on. This is my football. This is my turn.
Okay, here's the deal. I am sympathetic to athletes' wives, especially football players' wives. It is not an easy life, and dealing with those guys throughout the week, during the season, is not easy. And I've talked to multiple wives about this. It's not an easy thing. But he, for the most part, he just finished playing. And he went back in and got $10 million for the family for 4 months of work. And in that 4 months of work, he gets his brains beat in. I don't know what Jay Cutler's going to do next, if he ends up moving into the booth or if this reality show thing is something that he feels could be lucrative and fun. But I will tell you, not that I am a friend of Kristen Cavallari's, but if I were, I would tell her to back off for a little while. It is a hard thing for those guys, one, to admit that it's over. Two, if they haven't made a decision about it, they don't want to be pressured. And three, his body's probably still not quite right from last season. It felt like, and if you watch the episode, there's a couple of allusions that, like, she goes back in on this with him. And some of it is playful. Like, I get that, like, haha, you're not working. But some of it, I was like, the dude brought home $136 million during the time that you guys were married. His body is broken. His mind probably is too. If he doesn't want to work for a while, I don't know if we should be like, Jay, you need to go back to work. I'm just saying. So keep that in mind. I know that part of the job of the spouse is to help focus you in on the next thing, but she needs to just simmer down a little bit. Just a little. But I am down for the Jay Cutler I Don't Want to Work campaign. Because isn't that the dream? The dream is I made all this money and now chilling. Absolutely chilling. And my job is to go drop the boys off at school and pick them up. It's funny because that pickup thing is really bothersome to Jay. Later on in the episode, he talks about how he got to the school 20 minutes early and was still like 12th in line to get the boys. So you can the competitiveness is still there. He's trying to be first in that line to pick his sons up. So I would tell you that Very Cavallari is worth watching because of Jay. It's worth watching because of him. I don't know how many episodes you're going to be able to manage because there's a lot of annoying stuff about the show when Jay isn't on the show. But I will tell you that I had a blast watching the first episode. That's right. And we're talking about it on sports radio. I don't care. I got time to take a couple of your phone calls if you want to jump in on this. 312-644-6767, or you can text us at 670-11. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll take some of your phone calls and texts. And also, we're going to get an update on Chris Bryant. We're going to talk with Mick Gillespie, who does play-by-play for the Tennessee Smokies. He's known Chris for a really long time, and they had a chat about how Chris is doing, how his shoulder is, and all of that. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This hour is being brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. And this segment is being brought to you by Credit Karma. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. Looking at some of the text messages that come in. This one, like, right on the head. 773 texter says, Lawrence, I'm an 80% disabled vet. I hurt everywhere. 16 years in the Navy, then right to a federal job for 9 years. I'm retired. $100,000 tax-free per year, and my wife asked me with disgust what I intend to do when I retire. I'm only 44. I answered nothing. She got mad at me. Exactly. We're going to get an update on Chris Bryant momentarily. Real quick, out to Cedar Lake and Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on The Score.
I think it's Rhonda.
Rhonda? Who's Rhonda, Matt?
I'm sorry. I was talking to the pharmacist.
Oh, okay. Do you want us to call you back? We can call you back.
No, sorry about that, Lawrence.
No problem. What's on your mind?
Just that little bit of Kristen Cavallari that I heard. If I'm Jay, I'm going to come intern at The Score for free or do anything. I'd run to the booths or be a quarterback's coach at anywhere just to get away from that.
I appreciate the phone call. I'm sure he could go back to Vanderbilt and be fine. It's just a good show. It's funny. I enjoyed it. You will too. Watch it and let me know what you think. We'll discuss again next week. After next week's episode, there are some awful people on that show, and none of them is named Jay Cutler. Just so you know. Speaking of Tennessee, which is where the Cutlers live, not too far, is where the Smokies play. And that's where Chris Bryant is for the next couple days, and we'll see if he makes his way out there. Mick Gillespie does play-by-play. He's the minor league play-by-play man, broadcaster of the year last year down there. Does a great job covering the Tennessee Smokies and Alabama pre- and post-game. I'm happy to have Mick on the show. Mick, thanks for joining me. I want to ask you about Chris Bryant. What's it like to have Bryant back down there?
Well, I mean, look, it's fantastic. I mean, I was just telling the people on the pregame TV show here that you don't get the opportunity to bring back possibly the best player in your franchise history and for a minor league team you know, Chris Bryant was here for half a season and made that kind of an impact, and then, you know, goes on to what's become the start of a Hall of Fame career very often. I mean, it just doesn't happen that much, but it's been great. There's a lot of electricity in the city. We're expecting a sellout crowd tonight, and people are just so elated to have him back, and even if it's just for two games, be able to go out and watch him.
Did I hear that it's Chris Bryant bobblehead night or something too?
It was Chris Bryant koozie night yesterday. We gave away 1,000 of the Chris Bryant koozies, and then when I was talking to Chris before the game, I was telling him that you know, a lot's changed since you were here. We've done 4 bobbleheads, and then there's a life-size bobblehead of Chris that's on our concourse right now. And so I'm talking about, well, I say life-size, larger than life because it's 8 feet tall, and he looked up and saw it from where we were standing and thought it was pretty creepy, but I think he liked it too.
Okay. I mean, I understand. I completely understand that. Mick, I want to know, you sat there, you've known Chris Bryant for a long time. You talked with him over the last couple of days. How's he feeling?
Yeah, I've known Chris a long time. I've always liked him. I think that his personality transcends his ability on the field, and he's one of the major stars in the game that really gets how important the fans are to the entire operation, the entire business. And he always gives so much to the community, and, you know, he wants to sign every autograph, and he's been like that since he was here before, and he still is that way. But I asked him, I said, how do you feel? You know, you haven't played since June 23rd. And he said he feels really, really good, and went down and watched him take batting practice, and the swing was there, and, you know, he was hitting the ball into the double deck in left field with relative ease. And you just, at this level, you know, and his swing's gotten better since he was here, which you would expect that. You just don't see someone that comes in and with that easy of a stroke is able to hit the ball that far. But so far, he feels great. And what we're hoping is we've got a noon game tomorrow here that things will go really smoothly for him tonight, and then he'll play tomorrow and go back to San Francisco, you know, meet up with the team in San Francisco.
So no pain? He hasn't experienced any pain or anything after all this swinging?
Mm-mm. What he said was, you know, it was time for him to mention it when he did, and he's glad that he did, and that the time off really helped heal him up, and that he's, you know, that he's just ready to get back out there again and basically just shake off the cobwebs.
Okay, well, that's positive. You watch a lot of baseball. It's what you're doing when it's not the fall and you're watching a ton of football. I'm curious, do you think that what he does with launch angle, he's been a proponent of launch angle since he was a little kid. His dad taught it to him. Do you think that it has any effect on how he swings, and do you think that it'll change if he continues to have issues with his shoulder?
Yeah, I don't think that the two things are related. I mean, I think that when you get out there and play every day, I mean, you might jam your shoulder diving into a base or diving for a ball. I mean, it's just, this is the first time he's ever been injured. I mean, he was talking about that today, that he's been so fortunate in his career because the durability's been there. He learned to hit. He's been hitting like the right-handed Ted Williams since he was a kid. And, of course, you know his dad, Mike, learned that swing from the splendid splinter himself, you know, and it works. And so I just can't imagine doing too much to change what has been so successful for him in his career. And I really don't think that it, you know, you go back and you look at some of the greatest players of all time and the way that they swung the bat. I mean, go watch Stan Musial, you know, in his back, his numbers facing the pitcher, you know, and he's going to coil around and, you know, and then, Gary Sheffield, who's kind of got the same swing as Javi, you know, and he played a ton of games and wasn't hurt all the time, you know. It's going out there, playing the game, and just trying to avoid putting yourself in a spot where, you know, you get something jammed or something. Well, it's bound to happen because you play 162 games. So I doubt that much would change with him. And honestly, when you look at the results, you know, and maybe not where things were right before he went on the DL. Maybe he played with pain. He's probably not going to tell us that right before he finally said, you know what, I need a little bit of time to heal up. But up until that point, and even his numbers this year are really good. And he's one of the great players, not just on the Cubs, but in baseball. So, you know, I can't imagine doing too much to change that winning stroke.
I'm so glad that you brought up the point that Ted Williams was a proponent of launch angle. People tend to forget that that was a thing. Mick, as always, man, I appreciate you jumping on. I'm glad that you're getting the opportunity to watch that superstar down there. And roll tide, sir.
Hey, roll tide, my friend. And good to talk to you again, Lawrence. And anytime you need anything, let's do it.
That's Mick Gillespie, who does play-by-play for the Tennessee Smokies. Talked with Chris Bryant today. He's in the lineup down there tonight. So maybe this means that Chris Bryant will be back this weekend. That would be great if he's good to go. That just adds another good bat to a lineup that's been producing runs over the last few weeks, which is good news because their starting pitching has not been great. We're going to take a break. When we come back, an interview with Adam Amin, the new preseason Bears play-by-play guy. It's a guy you need to get to know. He's local. Addison Trail High School, Valparaiso University is a great interview, and I want to share it with you next here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Glad that you're hanging out. My name is Lawrence Holmes here with you until 8:40 on Saturday. I am going to be out at Ed Nableton Honda in Oak Lawn from 1 until 3, and that's because we'll be doing the USO barbecue for the troops. Come out to Ed Nableton Honda in Oak Lawn for the 6th annual USO barbecue for the troops fundraising event. Enjoy delicious food, support a great cause, and visit The Score. I'll be there. Our Score tent will be there, and I will be under it. So if you're a vet or someone who's still serving, come on through. Ed Nableton Honda, we will have a good time on Saturday afternoon. Last week, I had a chance to talk with Adam Amin, who I think is one of the best young play-by-play men in the country. It was great to have him here in studio, local guy, still lives here. And we had a great conversation about his new gig. His new gig is going to be doing play-by-play for Bears preseason games, except for the Hall of Fame game, which will be on NBC. But he'll be taking over for Dick Stockton, and I think it's an upgrade. No disrespect to Mr. Stockton, but it was time. We had a great chat. I wanted you to hear him and hear it. And it started off with me asking him about how it feels when he got the call from the Bears to take over that gig.
You know, I was thrilled. To do a hometown team and to be a part of that. And I know it's preseason. It's not the regular season. The stakes aren't necessarily as high as they might be in a big regular season game. I understand all that, but there's investment. And that's all we really care about, I think, as announcers, is there an investment from a fan? Is there an investment from an audience? And with the NFL, for whatever reason, and you know whether it's declining or not, over the last decade and a half, the NFL has been the great uniter in this country. Every city that has an NFL team, that's the regionalization of the sport. Football in general is a very provincial, regionalized sport. And I don't think it's any different in the NFL. It unites cities together, and I think that's the great uniter here in Chicago in terms of sports fans is the Bears. And when there's excitement surrounding the team, you can kind of feel it in this city. And there is some excitement surrounding this team. So to be a part of that in some very, very, very small way, that's awesome. Like that's a thrill to be a part of something like that.
I always love to ask the brown sugar question. So when did you fall in love with sports? Like what was that moment?
I think it was probably, I'm going to say when I was probably 5 or 6 watching Cubs games. My dad was a big Cub fan, and he was the one that kind of got me hooked on baseball in general and sports in general. And you know, he passed away about 4 months ago, so like we're really close, and that's always a connection that he and I had. So he's the one that really got me into sports. My brothers I'm really tight with, and they were my coaches growing up and in whatever sports I was playing. So for me, I think it was like 4, 5, 6 years old watching Cubs games with my pop. I was at the first night game in Wrigley Field history. I don't remember it very well because I was basically like an infant at that time, but I apparently was at the game that got rained out against
8-8-88.
I was at the one that got rained out actually against the Phillies before the first official game against the Mets was played. So it was, I think that's how it got started, man. And it kind of just blossomed from there.
When did you know that you wanted to make a career out of your love for this?
I didn't. I'm not like a lot of guys who are like, you know, oh, I was 8 years old and I knew this is what I was going to do. I was like a lot of kids. I turn down the volume and call the play-by-play of, you know, whatever NHL game or video game you're playing, or turn down the volume and call the baseball game, like, just as, you know, just for fun. But that wasn't like a thing that was on my radar. I didn't really figure this out until I was maybe like 18 or 19 years old and I was in college. And I thought, you know, let's give this a shot. I didn't know what I wanted to do out of high school. I was a jack of all trades, master of very, 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 very little. And I thought, you know, let's give this a shot. I had some friends that went to Valpo. They were at the radio station there. They said, come here. If you want to try broadcasting, try it. And come here, we'll put you on the air. So I went to Valpo. And as a college freshman, I walked into the radio station. And I said, all right, let's try it. Let's give it a shot. And that's where I fell in love with it. I didn't know it was a thing until I was like 18, 19 years old. And now, I mean, you know, we're in the candy store at this point, playing in the toy store right now.
You can't beat that. Adam Amin is here in studio with me. You can watch him and listen to him on ESPN. He is going to be doing preseason games of Bears football this year. Are you going to make it to Canton? I know that's a national game, but
I'm going to stay here, actually. I want to see what the broadcast says, and that'll be big for me to see what the national storylines are. You know, it'll be likely Alan Chris or maybe Tirico and Chris Collinsworth. So it'll be good to see what the national perspective of the Bears is going into that. Into the second preseason game that we'll all be a part of.
Yeah, I'm actually going down. I mean, I spent my time, I was the Bears beat reporter for The Score,
yep,
during the Urlacher era. So I'm getting
a chance to see Brian get inducted, man.
Yeah,
that's
he
awesome.
Just got his jacket, and yep, the video was out there. I'm a little worried of what might happen with all of his teammates coming in to celebrate, like what that might look like.
Last year, my college football partner was Dusty Dvorak.
And
he's my dude. Like, I was just on his radio show today. He's one of my we became super tight friends. Unfortunately, we're not going to work together this year. But I mean, he's one of my best buds. And he and Urlacher were very close when Dusty was here in Chicago, and he became very close with Brian. They still go on, him and his wife go on vacation with Brian and his family. They just went on vacation together, I think, last month. In fact, they're really close. So he was like, "I'm going to be in Canton with Brian and my old teammates." I was like, "Dude, go get after it!" But you know, just make sure you stay out of jail or whatever, man.
Yeah.
Those guys, there's some legendary stories out there. You and I, you know, over a beer or something, we'll have to share some of those together.
Yeah, man. I do a pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago with Alex Brown and Lance Briggs.
Yeah.
So I've heard some of the stories, and they're great.
Yeah,
they are legendary.
Absolutely.
Stories.
Patrick Manley, Devin Hester. We did an event together last year, and we were talking about a couple of things, and Dusty shared some great ones, and I mean, it's a good group, and that's the one thing that Dusty always told me about that group, and I'm sure you saw it firsthand. They legitimately were a very tight knit group. The team that went to the Super Bowl, which I think was Dusty's rookie year, if I'm not mistaken. I know he's banged up most of that time, but that was a really tight-knit group. The defense especially, a lot of really close relationships. And there was you could kind of tell when a team likes each other, when there's a chemistry there. It does translate, I think, to the field a little bit. And I think we really saw that with that defense.
Charles Tillman and Alex Brown still go over to each other's houses and play capture the flag.
Yeah.
They just stand in the ring, put flags on, and then have to fend off the other one from grabbing the
flag.
That's
awesome.
It's really amazing. And what's really funny is, I'm going to pick up another name as soon as I drop it, but I was on Twitter yesterday talking with Thomas Jones. And Thomas Jones now, a listener pointed this out to me on Tuesday night show, and I related to Thomas yesterday that if you look under Wikipedia now, it's Thomas Jones is an American actor. The guy played 12 years in the league, ran for 10,000 yards, and he's done such a great job of transitioning into his post-career life that now he is now seen as an actor. He's been great on Luke Cage so far this year.
Yeah, man, that's really cool to see it too, man. Like, and I know it's blown up on Netflix right now, so like, that's really cool to see that he's made that transition.
I'm really happy for him. I'm really happy for you too. Like, this is, look, it's the preseason. It's not the regular season. You've got a slate of other things that you do, but I would imagine that this, once the light clicked on, you're at Valpo, this had to be one of those things that was on the list of, man, I would love to do this.
I always wanted to do something here, you know, and I'm happy that my career's played out, and I'm well aware I'm the stupid luckiest guy on the planet. Like, I'm well aware of that, but I'm glad it kind of played out the way it did, getting a chance to do the national stuff at a relatively low level too. I was 24 when I got hired at ESPN, and that's like that's an anomaly, and that's there, that takes a lot of lucky breaks. Like there's a lot of people out there that are way more talented that just haven't gotten that type of break yet, and they could easily be in the position that I'm in. So I try not to take that for granted, but I'm glad it's played out this way because I got a chance to learn at a lower level on the national stage, you know, 10:30 Eastern time, college football on tape delay, and doing college volleyball and college softball, college wrestling, kind of the stuff that isn't on everybody's radar immediately, and learning and screwing up and being bad at it at first, and kind of honing my skill at that point, to the point where then I feel comfortable. And again, it's all subjective whether I'm good or not. That's up to a fan or every individual to decide. But I feel better doing this. I feel more confident doing this. And I'm glad now I get a chance to do something locally because I want my city, like the place that I'm from, to see me in a positive light. Obviously, like there's a little bit more emotional investment almost in this because it's my hometown team. It's one thing when I go do a college football game, or I've done NFL for the last 6 years on national radio. Like that's been great. But it's one thing if I'm doing the 49ers and the Seahawks. Like I don't have an emotional investment in that. This I have an emotional investment in, even though it's the preseason. And I know, like I said, that's what's important to me. When fans are invested, that's important to me. And now I have the added benefit and bonus and maybe the added pressure of having some emotional investment myself in this gig.
On your call, what is it that you want to convey to fans? And I'm not even just talking about the preseason Bears stuff, but when you're doing play-by-play, what's important for you to get across to the people who are watching or listening?
I think to have them walk away with something that they can that sticks with them. It doesn't have to be something emotionally heavy or anything like that, but just something they walk away and go, that sounds like it's important. That seems like it's important. I take pride in trying to be efficient on the air. I don't want to overload a broadcast too much. I see a lot. What we do on TV is often superfluous. It just is. Like we're all guilty of it as play-by-play announcers and probably analysts a little bit too. We all probably all talk a little bit too much or talk over the heads of some fans. At the end of the day, you just need to give some information, some anecdotal material, whatever it is, to a fan in a way that's easily absorbed. I keep telling people a broadcast is only as good as what a listener on the radio or what a viewer at home on their couch can process and what they can absorb and what they can walk away from understanding that you've given them. So that's the most important thing to me. I don't want to overload anybody, but I want to make sure they walk away with the information necessary so that they have an understanding of what their team is all about.
How much do you work off the screen versus working off of what you see with your eyes on a field?
It's a lot of back and forth for me. I think I'm looking at the field in the play. I don't like looking at the monitor for the play, and that's the radio guy in me. You know, I was a radio guy far before I was ever a television guy. So for me, it's always about the action in front of you. And when the play is over or when the play is about to end, my eyes are going to go right back to the monitor, especially if it's a short run up the middle. And I know this is a little inside baseball, but we'll pull the curtain back a little bit. The mechanics of broadcasting on television, I still want to know the full scope of what's happening in the play. So I'm going to look with my eyes at the field when I call the play. But as soon as I believe the play's over, I got to look back at the monitor because now the director and the producer might show you something sitting at home. I can't be looking off somewhere else. Now I have to be in sync with the guy sitting on his couch. So when the play's over, my eyes go right back to the monitor. That way I can either set Jim up for something, my partner up with something. If there's a player that our director wants to show, if it's a 5-yard run and we want to talk about the running back on that play and they show Tariq Cohen. All right, let's talk about Tariq Cohen now. That way I'm in sync with not only the producer and the director, but now with you sitting at home as well.
Adam, when was the point when you knew that you had it? Like not that any of us feel like we're perfect, but where you started to feel comfortable in your own skin calling play by play?
It wasn't until recently, and I agree with you. Let's preface it by saying not nearly where I'd ever want to be or like you think you got it made or you figured it out or anything like that. But it took me a while to actually feel like, all right, this is what you're supposed to sound like, and this is how you're supposed to approach the job. It really wasn't until maybe like the last year or year and a half. And I hope I'm saying that in 5 years too. I hope in 5 years I'm saying, oh, it was about a year ago, because that means you're constantly trying to get better at it. But for me, it was like a year and a half ago where somebody gave me some really good advice. I got some great advice from some really good broadcasters, and they said, talk slower, talk less. Like, and I know that seems almost counterintuitive as a play-by-play announcer. You're going, well, but what about, you know, telling this story, or what about giving this nugget or this information? But like I said earlier, man, we're all guilty of it. We're all guilty of being a little bit superfluous in our job, specifically in play-by-play, because the fans can see it. The philosophy I've tried to live by recently is 5 to 10. And as an announcer, there are 5 to 10 moments on any given night where you have to be on it. And that doesn't necessarily mean 5 to 10 calls. I think that's just 5 to 10 moments. It could be 2 or 3 big calls, but it might have to be a rule explanation that you have to nail so that a fan knows where you're coming from. It might be one great story that really sits with a fan and they walk away going, man, that was a great nugget about that player. I'm going to remember that for a long time. And then it might just be the last call of the game. Like, you have to be on it for those 5 to 10. And everything else, as long as you're palatable, factually accurate, fans will respect you and they'll appreciate the job that you're trying to do. But those 5 to 10, you've got to be on it.
You said earlier that you think that this is an exciting time for the Bears. Yeah. Why is that the case?
Obviously, year two of Trubisky, getting him comfortable. Granted, in a little bit of a different offense, and that's the other reason people are excited. The first thing I noticed when I was out there at OTAs, the buzz about the offense was very apparent. Talking with, you know, whether it's Joniak or talking with the beat writers or talking with some of the coaches, running into Matt Nagy, he said the same thing. Matt said the same thing. There's a buzz about this offense a little bit. People are excited to be a part of it. People are excited to learn it. And the weapons that are now being inserted into this offense, there's a reason that people are excited about. Whether it is Trey Burton in that tight end kind of H-back role, whether it is Allen Robinson being healthy enough in the position that he's in, whether it is Trubisky, whether it is a feel for Tariq Cohen, who kind of burst on the scene last year, there is a legitimate excited feel about what this offense could be capable of. I'm not saying it's going to be gangbusters right out of the gate, but there is some potential here, and there's a reason why. There's a higher level of talent now than there was maybe a year ago.
You call NFL games. What are people around the league saying about Matt Nagy?
They were impressed with what he did in Kansas City. I think there's reason to be excited about his scheme. Obviously, when you're under Andy Reid, there's going to be a lot of deference to Reid. Obviously, with the clock management issues at times that Andy Reid has become known for, I don't think that's really going to plague Matt Nagy. I'm not really concerned about that. He had a really efficient quarterback in Alex Smith for a good chunk of that time in Kansas City. I think if Mitch Trubisky can get to that point of efficiency, I think he's got the potential to be more talented. So I already think there's a leg up in this offense compared to where they were in Kansas City. They were a little bit bland, a little vanilla looking at times, but I think that had more to do with Alex not being able to attack as much downfield, and that's kind of been a knock on Alex Smith for the last 5 or 6 years of his career, but he was a mobile guy. I think Mitch Trubisky has some of those tendencies as well, to be mobile, to get out of the pocket. So the elements, I think, are there. I'm not saying you're going to watch a Kansas City tape from the last 2 years and go, oh, this is what it's going to look like. I don't think you judge it based off of that. I think you judge it based off the pieces and elements that were in place that were really positive in that offense, up the talent level a little bit, which I think the Bears do have. And I think the elements are there for a really good offense this year.
The only thing that I'm sad for you for with this new gig of calling Bears preseason is I don't think that they'll have Tariq Cohen in enough for you to,
yeah,
to, you know what I mean? Because that guy last year was so electric,
yeah,
when he got the ball in his hands. I hope that you get to call a fun Tariq Cohen play.
Yeah, at some point. And again, that's the one thing you can't get overly excited about in the preseason, because it's more about managing reps and making sure nobody gets hurt. Obviously, those are much more important factors. So it is a different broadcast than going into, like I said, week one of the regular season, or if we're doing a college football game or whatever it may be, when there are stakes involved now at this point. So I don't want to get too excited or too ahead of myself, but all that being said, I think there's so much potential here. And that's the thing that I keep hearing, the potential for this offense to really get back towards the top half of the league. And getting to the top half of the league, especially in the NFL, the turnaround in this league is so fast. It is not like baseball. It is not like the NBA. You can turn things around relatively quickly. Although I would say the NBA has shifted in that regard as well, where one or two signings can turn a team around. I do think in the NFL, more than any other major sport that we've seen with a legitimate trend over a decade and a half, 2 decades, you can turn things around in this league very, very fast. And I think that's why there should be excitement about this team.
Once you figured out that this is what you wanted to do, who were the play-by-play guys that you said, I like their style. I'm going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of this and turn it into what I already am.
I think you take from everywhere. And for me, when I first really became a student of it, you start here and then you branch out. So listening to Jeff on Bears games was huge for me. Listening to Pat Hughes, who I'd been listening to for most of my life. I mean, that he was a huge influence on me. And I've been lucky to have both of those people in my life in some way at various times and have their doors be open for me to ask for advice. That's the type of people that they are as well, always willing to lend some advice and give you some of their wisdom. That's been incredible. I thought Wayne Larrivee was one and still is one of the greatest play-by-play guys in the history of football on the radio. And then when you branch out, Kevin Harlan, he influenced me a lot. And I worked with his daughter, so I became close with his family. That's been a great relationship. Nationally, Mike Tirico, Sean McDonough, in more recent years, guys like Joe Tessitore. I mean, there's so many great announcers out there too. And I'm sure I'm shorting somebody at some point. I mean, there's a myriad of guys and women you can choose from to take a little bit from here and there, and you kind of crib note it until you figure it out yourself, you know, and then you finally find your voice where you feel comfortable doing this job.
That's Adam Amin. You should follow him on Twitter at Adam Amin, A-M-I-N. Great interview. I'm glad that we got to run it back, and I'm glad that he'll be doing Bears preseason games this year, because they needed a new voice, and I think he's the perfect guy to do it, and he's clearly a guy that cares and wanted that job, which I think helps. We're taking a break. We're going to talk about UFC 226 next here with Dave Ross on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.